Welcome to What's Eric Eating? Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map editor Eric Sandler. Today on the show, we'll talk about some news in the world of Houston restaurants, as well as our meals at a couple of new restaurants you may want to try. To do that, I'm joined by my co-host this week. He is a Houston hospitality veteran and a co-founder of the Houston Barbecue Festival. Michael Fulmer, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm outstanding. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for doing this. Look, as we dive into the news of the week, you know, it's been a couple of weeks since we've done this. So we have like some kind of big stories to catch up on. This isn't necessarily like the freshest news, but we haven't had a chance to weigh in on them. So this is what we've got. Let me kick things off with topic number one. No bigger news than Chris Cusack being arrested for health code violations at the Washington location of his bar slash pizzeria, Beetlejuice. I talked to Chris about this. He spoke to me and said basically that Beetlejuice has always had kind of a complicated food delivery system. When he opened the restaurant or the bar, it had a food truck. The food truck had a fire. And so they started making the food at a bar that's basically around the corner, kind of catty corner from Beetlejuice. And it's mostly pizza. So they basically just walk it over to you. It's kind of an internal delivery pizza situation. And when the health department started kicking around for their food dealer's permit, Chris said, well, look, we have one under the LLC of the food truck, but there's no food truck anymore. And obviously the inspector was not happy with that. And Chris got a little bit argumentative with the inspector. And so she showed up in force with police officers and TABC and other Houston Health Department inspectors, and they basically threw the book at him. And long story short, he wound up in handcuffs for health code violations. And Michael, I just have to say, you've been in this industry a long time. You've worked in Houston and other cities. Have you ever heard of a restaurateur being arrested for health code violations?
Not in this city, I haven't. You know, I know it happened in DC when I was there, and it happened in New York too, but, you know, not here. And I've been through multiple inspections before with different inspectors, and it can be, you know, it can be a different experience with each one as you go through it.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things as an outsider that's always been a little bit confusing to me is that, you know, I know in the building permitting process, different inspectors are looking for different things, and one might say something's okay, and then another comes back a week later and says it's not. And I feel like it's kind of that way with health inspectors where they have some discretion, and so sometimes someone might let something slide or it might not come up. And so, you know, a restaurateur could be operating long-term for months and not know that they're in violation until someone else comes through and says, oh yeah, this is not okay.
I don't think it's a different experience necessarily each time. I mean, different inspectors can create different things. One thing that's worth noting is that they have this extremely long checklist, and inspectors are looking for some, you know, there's some very obvious points that they're looking for, like hot water, like prep areas, cutting boards, you know, cross contamination, you know, the possibility of that occurring. These are very important things, of course. Now, there's always, for most places, there's always going to be a little thing that they can hit you with. And generally, if an inspector sees that you're making all the proper efforts, and maybe you don't have a sign on your bathroom door that says, you know, wash your hands afterwards, you know, they'll put it on their notation. They'll go, you know, usually they'll just put a notation saying, get the sign up there. I'm going to come back in 2 weeks or 30 days. It's usually one of the others. And that needs to be handled. And they might have a list of those things. If they see that a restaurateur is really making all the proper efforts and there's just a few things, they'll make a notation. Okay. But the other side of that is if they see that there's a lot of egregious dings on it, then that'll get marked and you'll get put onto the healthcare report. And the thing about that is, you know, when you see a local, you know, like the Chronicle noting that they'll, you know, these restaurants have been hit with violations, all they're doing is going to the health department website to see who's been dinged on that. And then they print that. And the last thing you want as a restaurateur is to make that list and be put, you know, onto a media, you know, notation for that.
Right. Famously, this was Marvin Zindler's bread and butter for years. The
100%
Friday Rat and Roach report, slime in the ice machine, you know, right. All that.
What do we have? All together, gang. Slime in the ice machine.
He said slime in the ice machine.
If you're a Houstonian of a certain age, you know what I'm talking about. If you're too young to know what I'm talking about, then look it up.
Marvin Zindler, Eyewitness News.
Now, my experience with them has always been a pretty positive one, but one of variance, to be sure. I remember one night, it was a Friday night, 7:30, the middle of a rush. You know, I'm managing, I'm expediting, I'm running the floor. And an inspector showed up at 7:30, and it was a very small restaurant. It wasn't like there was a team of managers here. It was just me. And they said, I'm here for an inspection. And I remember like taking a moment ago at 7:30, you know, I said with some incredulity. And I remember them responding with, you have a problem with that? And I'm like, I have no problem at all, you know, and we got it handled. You know, that's not a very common for them to show up at that time, you know, when people are, the place is so busy, but we got it handled. And so really inspectors are looking for a sense of, are you doing all the things that you need to be doing? And if there's something that's not there, are you showing the effort?
Right. And I think Chris acknowledges that part of what happened is he got a little mouthy with the inspector, and I'm sure that they don't like that. They want their authority to be respected. They want to be treated respectfully, of course, as we all do when we're trying to do our jobs. And they threw the book at him. And, you know, I think from an outside perspective, I think an arrest for an issue like this is probably extreme. And as you said, it's extremely rare. I've never heard of it. That doesn't mean it's never happened before. It just means if it had happened to a prominent restaurant, I certainly would have heard about it. And, you know, this is playing itself out in court. You know, obviously the restaurant reopened after a couple of days, whatever issue, whatever justification the health department used to shutter them for a couple of days was they found someone else at a higher authority who allowed them to reopen, and it's playing itself out in the court process. But Chris got through an initial hearing, and then there'll be another hearing, I think, in July, and hopefully that'll be the end of it. But yeah, just a very unusual situation for anyone, and certainly, you know, for Beetlejuice. They say there's no such thing as bad publicity. This is probably right on that line of where, like, you know, maybe you'd rather not have had this particular form of publicity.
Yeah, I would wrap up with, I mean, the situation. This is from totally an outsider looking in. You know, there's lots of complications when you're preparing food. Not in the same building, you're carrying it across, you've changed, like, there obviously then you need to really kind of lean hard into, you know, let's get this resolved, and we're doing everything we need to be doing correctly, and if not, we need your assistance for that. And it sounded like things just escalated, you know in a very unfortunate way on both sides. So I hate to see it that happen. But we also want everything to be, you know, handled correctly, because food safety means everything for us.
Absolutely. All right, let's move on to topic number two. Rupor owner Mac McDonald is planning to open Mac Allen's, a massive new steakhouse. It is opening near River Oaks. Like, I don't quite know what to call this neighborhood. It's kind of, it used to be the St. Regis, like the hotel, but the St. Regis is rebranded to something else whose name I've been told that it is no longer the St. Regis. What its new name is, I'm not readily aware of it. But this is north of San Felipe, just outside the Loop, north of River Oaks District, I guess. So it's kind of an unusual location for a restaurant in the sense that it's mostly office buildings, doctor's offices, you know, that sort of thing. And it's huge. It's like 15,000 square feet or maybe even a little bigger. They're going to have multiple private dining rooms. They're going to do steak and other seafood and cocktails and wine and all these other things. Michael, you've worked in your share of steakhouses. What do you think about Mac Allen's?
You know, we've had this discussion before. Has, you know, Houston reached peak on steakhouses? And I've seen this discussion happen, you know, in New York and in DC. And really, there's no ceiling for it. Is you can constantly open them because people love a high-end steak experience. The key is, can you endure? You know, are you putting it in the right neighborhood? And it sounds like they are. You know, we've seen that in the last 15 to 20 years, when it was kind of like you had Pappas was the big guy and V&A opened, and Ben Berg saw an opportunity in the Heights that nobody, you know, he saw, rightfully so, for B&B Butchers and just exploded. And there's no steakhouse right there, you know. Now, is Morton's, Capital Grill, and to some extent Pappas, are they all in a fairly nearby? Yes.
Yeah, let me just interrupt you and disagree with you just a little bit, because it's right, I mean, it's blocks, you know, less than a mile from Steak 48. If you cross 610, you have all of the Galleria steakhouses that are in and around the Galleria, Capital Grill, Del Frisco's.
Mastro's.
Trulix doesn't like it when I call them a steakhouse, but I think of it as a steakhouse. You know, King's Steak even that opened last year. There's no shortage of steaky options in within a mile of it. And so I'm always a little skeptical. And for years, my argument when people say, oh, we have too many steakhouses is, first of all, that's not how capitalism works. And second of all, show me the steakhouse that closed. And now you can come back at me and you can say, well, Andiron didn't work. And Perry's, which is very popular all over the city, didn't work in River Oaks. And so now you've got a couple to come back at me with and say, well, maybe we have reached peak steakhouse. But obviously, Mac McDonald has been very successful, you know, both with the Root Pour and some of his other ventures. And so, you know, this will have all the money in the world behind it. And so maybe this will be fine.
It's got to have deep pockets to, you know, not just to open, but to endure the first 3 to 6 months. You know, in some areas, you know, you've got to hit it right off the bat. And that's going to be something that they have to build on. You know, it's not just destination or celebratory dinners. It's business dinners that really make the difference in that, I think, in that area. You know, the expense account, and, you know, oil is over $80 a barrel, and that's what fuels a lot of our economy, and a lot of it flows through the Galleria area. So is there room for another one to get a piece of that pie? You know, potentially there is. I mean, that was a former luxury destination, so it has that kind of aura behind it. But, you know, are people going to go there, and like, how are they going to separate themselves? I'm not really sure.
Right. That's really the ultimate question, is how do you separate yourself? How do you get people out of Masters and Steak 48, which are the kind of the two big dogs in that immediate area? How do you differentiate yourself? You know, that part's not clear to me, but, you know, we'll keep an open mind, right? This restaurant's going to open this summer. It's going to get a big push. It's going to be very pretty, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, we'll see.
All right. And then topic number three. Just briefly, I don't want to get too far into the weeds on this, but I did want to note that Blue Dorn Hospitality has announced that they are coming to the Pearl District in San Antonio. This will be their first restaurant that is not in the Houston area. It's a big deal for Aaron Blue Dorn, his wife, Victoria, and their business partner, Sharif Mboj, to go to another city. And I'll say I saw Aaron at Bar Blue Dorn a couple weeks ago, and I was like, look, man, you guys have sent out this press release. You're not giving us the name. You're not giving us the concept. You're not giving us any details at all. You got to give me something. And he goes, not yet. All we're telling you is that we're coming to San Antonio. We're not telling you what we're doing. But, you know, Michael, we've been to all of the Blue Dorn restaurants multiple times. What do you think about their prospects in San Antonio?
I think it's a great idea. I mean, I've been kind of on the record that San Antonio has not grown. Their restaurant scene has not grown, certainly commensurate with what we've seen in Houston, Austin, and the DFW area. And it's always been kind of a head scratcher to me, because it's, depending on what metrics you look at, it's like the 10th largest city in this country. And it's not that there aren't good restaurants, it's just there's not very many, and there's not been this exciting sense of growth there that we've seen in the other Texas cities. There's been some good places to be sure, but even the barbecue scene really hasn't really expanded very much. And certainly the high-end and creative dining scene has not either. And I think this is exciting, and I think it's great for both the city as well as the Blue Dorn Group.
No, I think that's all well said. I think if you kind of look at San Antonio, there's, you know, for a long time there was Cured, which closed last year. Now there's Mixedly, the Mexican tasting menu concept that's very well thought of. But right. Then if you look at like what Emmer and Rye Hospitality did, they opened Pullman Market, they put a bunch of restaurants in it, and they're all great. And Isidore and Nicozy, getting the Michelin guide. And so, you know, I think there is this sense that there's a lot of opportunity in San Antonio. And if you, you know, execute it well, You know, it's like out of touch West Coast restaurateurs used to say about Houston. Well, they're starved for good dining here. And then they'd come in with a subpar concept and leave in a year and a half. But I think Aaron and Victoria and Sharif are much more thoughtful than that. I think they understand what the opportunity in San Antonio is. And to be in the Pearl, which is such a cool area. It's got that incredible hotel. It's got, you know, just a ton of other restaurants. And so there is this opportunity to be in a tourist destination that draws people in a way that's completely different than anything in Houston. And to, you know, do something, you know, I don't really want to speculate on whether it's going to be like Bar Blue Dorn or whether it's going to be more like Big Blue Dorn or you know, whatever. But surely they have some ideas. You know, they keep rolling smokers into an event and focusing on their. So, you know, I'd be very curious to see if they don't find a way to do that on a more permanent basis. But I think whatever they do will be interesting and will certainly get us on the road out to San Antonio to try it at some point.
Yeah. I mean, the Blue Dorn Group is known for several things, not the least of which is like incredible preparation on their food, the technique on their food. They don't really push the envelope of creativity so much. It's not this, but it's always really well considered and well thought of. And the service, you know, Sharif, who's behind their training program for that, is like, to me, second to none. It's fantastic. It's just like a big bear hug. And you mentioned like the smoker. They've got that Queen Bee Mill Scale that Aaron got a few while ago, and he's done collaborations with several different pit masters, particularly Leonard Patello from Truth. And he's gotten really good at operating it himself and bringing the staff in. So, you know, I'm with you. I think I could see them incorporating something like that. I don't want to speculate too far on what they're going to do, but I just know that the restaurant group as a whole, between back of the house and front of the house, is very solid.
Absolutely. All right. I'm going to say that does it for the news of the week. We'll be right back with our restaurants of the week. Stick around. Michael, for our restaurants of the week, I want to talk to you about two new izakayas that have opened relatively recently here in town. Let's start with Toga. This is the new restaurant at the intersection, the development at Kirby and Westheimer. It is from Kama Hospitality, who we know for their omakase concept Neo, their hand roll concept Kira, and their sushi restaurant in the Heights, Oru, all of which I have been to and enjoyed meals at. Toga's a little different. Toga's a little more casual. Toga's a little less expensive. And instead of focusing on primarily kind of raw and seafood, they're focusing on grilled chicken, you know, yakitori skewers, izakaya skewers with various chicken preparations. They've got a burger. They've got mussels. They've got seafood. So I say all that to say to you, what did you think about your meal at Toga?
So I've been a couple of times. First of all, I'm excited that we have a sort of yakitori-centered establishment, and the fact that we now have two is like great for us. You know, the Kama Group is, you know, they're very diligent with their R&D and with their food preparation, and like you, I've been to all their different concepts and enjoyed all of them. Having gone here, there's several dishes that were kind of stands out for me, things like the pickled shrimp. You know, which maybe on the outside doesn't even sound really alluring, but it was fantastic. The shrimp was not overdone. It was plump. It was delicious. It was crisp. You know, it was just hearty. It was a great dish. And then we had a tuna carpaccio, which is, you know, become almost a cliche dish, you know, where you see it now on all new restaurants opening up. And, you know, so I was kind of like, my expectation level was maybe just so-so, and it ended up being a standout dish with this wasabi mousse underneath with a hint of avocado, bringing it all together with some milk bread toast. It was just a delicious dish and something I would order again. And then, you know, I had several friends who had raved about the burger, like, I need to have yet another burger. You know, almost don't want to like it. This, you know, similar reaction at Octu. And this was it was really good. The mix is great. The bun is great. The ratio, I really enjoyed it. So it's an interesting concept, and there's definitely some dishes I enjoyed.
Yeah, you know, there are some dishes I enjoyed, and I'm with you on the tuna carpaccio, which was maybe my favorite of the single items we ate, which makes sense, right? I mean, if you've got a hospitality group that's primarily built around, you know, raw and cured fish preparations, like, it's not surprising that the tuna carpaccio is really good. It's super thinly sliced. It's got that kind of like avocado mousse under it. It's seasoned well. It's really delicious. I'm a little more of a skeptic, I guess, or you know, a little less enthusiastic about some of the hot items. You know, the burger has a lot going on. And I think just for my own personal taste, I like a slightly simpler burger. I felt like the flavor of the meat got a little bit lost in the toppings. And you know, you can say, well, you know, I'm excited to have more concepts built around izakaya skewers. But like when it's grilled chicken, it's hard for me to get excited about grilled chicken, you know? And I think part of it is that the grilled chicken at Oru is so great. That Cornish game hen that they do with that kind of backyard style char.
Amazing.
So delicious. And really like a surprising standout, right? You're going for sushi, but like, oh, get the, like, I always feel stupid telling people to get the chicken, but I only do that when the chicken is really outstanding. And at Toga, I've been twice. I wasn't that persuaded by it. You know, the only other thing that really stood out for me was that udon carbonara, right? Thick, chewy noodles with the uni, you know, like, yeah, we've seen uni pasta, uni carbonara. We've seen that dish a lot of places. It's a good version of it. But the other thing is, you know, we can talk about the food, but you also have to talk about the decor. And, you know, the other thing about these Kama concepts, especially Kira and Oru, is just how pretty they are. And I don't have that same reaction to Toga. You know, the room feels very austere. It's kind of a rectangle. They put a bar at one end and then tables at the other side. And then there's not really, so it doesn't feel balanced because there's not, the tables are all kind of clustered together. Not so that you're uncomfortable, but just in the way it's laid out. And, you know, if you think about, like, what's the classic Houston izakaya? Like, I would sort of argue that it's Tiger Den, you know, kind of set the mold for that. Or if you really want to go back to kind of Goro and Gun, that's what they were kind of going for. They're dark, they're intimate. They just have that kind of almost a speakeasy style. You're kind of tucked away from the world. Toga has big windows. It's bright. It doesn't have that feeling for me. And so, I mean, I liked individual dishes of our meal, but the overall experience just left me a little flat. And it pains me to say that because I love Kira. I think Kira is like one of the best sushi experiences in Houston. And I've really enjoyed my visits to Oru, and I want to go back to Oru and kind of see, now that they're, you know, six-ish months in, kind of how they're getting along. But Toga is a tougher sell for me. And I, you know, we always talk about, would you go back? It's going to be a while. Like, I don't have any particular incentive or motivation to go back to Toga anytime soon.
The two times I've been have been early when the sun was still up. And like you said, it fills it up with this bright light. And I guess, and this just kind of goes into expectation, you know, like the yakitori is kind of a bar experience, you know, small plates, good cocktail program. You know, and like you said, the kind of dark speakeasy feel to it. And it definitely did not feel that because we got this bright light, big open space. And so it did lack that sense of intimacy that maybe we had the expectations for. At least I did. And I think you did, too. So I think the food is coming out pretty good. It's executing on a pretty good level. I'd like to go back at a late hour and see how the feel is on that.
Yeah, maybe that's part of it. Maybe if we went back, but it's just, you know, there's only a little bit of art on the walls. Like, it just, it's white walls. It's very plain. It's just not, it just doesn't have the same excitement or ambiance that I like. The biggest problem with Toga is that Kira is next door, and I love everything about Kira. I love the menu. I want to eat every single one of those hand rolls. I love the kakigori at the end. The cocktails are delicious. That final, you know, that Macintosh turntable that's like, you know, $4,000 or whatever with the vintage sound system is so cool and kind of appeals to my like nerdy gearhead side. And I love the way it looks and it's so comfortable. And if I'm staring, if I get out of my car and I'm looking at the doors, and it's like I can go straight ahead and walk into Kira, or I can go to my right and I can go to Toga. I'm walking into Kira every time. Like there's just nothing about there was nothing on the Toga menu that was so exciting to me that I would choose it over Kira. And that's, again, it kind of pains me. And I'm not saying this restaurant is doomed or anything like that, because those guys are super smart. And I think like it just needs a little tweaking, or it's just not for me, you know, and that's okay. Like there are plenty of people who presumably will like it a lot more than I do, but for me, it's Kira every time.
I see your point.
All right. And then let's talk about Sip and Skewer. Speaking of izakayas, this is a 4-seat izakaya style bar. It is from the team behind Hidden Omakase. It is located at Sushi by Hidden, which is in Rice Village. And essentially they took what had basically been a service well at Sushi by Hidden, or like a little waiting area, and they spec'd it out. They put in a counter, they put in some seats, and they're doing a tasting menu with different skewers, different chicken preparations. And, you know, we got the full treatment, right? Marco Suarez, who's the head chef for that group and at Hidden Omakase, was there and cooked the skewers for us and walked through the preparation. And I know that's probably not going to be the experience that everybody gets, but I had a really good time at Sip and Skewer. I don't know. What did you think?
I loved it. You know, we talk about environment. You know, it was so intimate. There's only 4 seats and it's dark. You know, the lighting's really well thought of. And it just feels like this great personal experience. You know, it's not being, you're not just at a table that's being served by somebody. It's like, you know, the guy who's making this generally, or, you know, one step removed. You know, we also had a server too. We were getting the treatment. And really the preparation and the foods were just great. You know, and one of the advantages of having that kind of experience is you get to ask questions, and the chef also gets to kind of talk about what they're doing and where it came from. And that just creates a really memorable, it becomes more than just about the food. It becomes more than just about the environment. It becomes a real experience. And so, you know, we talk about these two experiences that I had virtually back to back, and like Sip and Skewers was really definitely my favorite of the two. And part of that is because it was such a great experience.
Yeah. And part of it is also just the diversity of the menu at Sip and Skewer. It's not just chicken, you know. I mean, yes, there's chicken, and that chicken breast with the green sauce that they kind of brush on. Every expectation for chicken breast is that it's dry or it's chewy or it's whatever. And this was so juicy and so moist and so delicious. It's like, this is what it's supposed to taste like. But then they throw curveballs at you. They did some grilled cabbage. They did some okra. They did a little steak. And then at the end you get the soba noodles and the grilled salmon. And it's just such a positive experience. And it's very reasonable. I mean, you know, for the quality of the experience, it's $70. And I think they're working on moving to an a la carte model, which is going to make it even more affordable. You can kind of pick your way through the menu. And I like that environment, right? It kind of has that feeling of, you know, being in Japan and going down an alley and dining at some little stand somewhere, which is, you know, like a, you know, quintessential Japanese experience, right? Depicted in any number of movies and documentaries and Anthony Bourdain shows. You know, you want that. Like I won't say that it's authentic. It's obviously recreated. It's inspired by these kind of ideas and, you know, both their experience being in Japan and also just, you know, how we sort of imagine dining in Japan. But, you know, it was very delicious and it was fun. And, you know, I'd go back and do that in a heartbeat. Like I just really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I would too. And like you mentioned, the salmon, that could have been my favorite dish of the night. It was just a great quality salmon and perfectly cooked. And they like little touches. They had that, like the bone broth that was there for like sort of as almost like a palate cleanser to sip as you go along. You know, it's little touches like that that really made it for more than just, oh, I'm eating this dish and then this dish. It made for it a real experience.
Yeah, I crushed two of those bone broth, like two full cups of the chicken broth. It was so good.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's very, if I had to sum it down to one word, it's very thoughtful.
Yeah, that's a good word for it. There's a lot of attention to detail. There's a lot of focus on dining experience. And that makes sense, right? That's what they do at Hidden Omakase. And, you know, Sushi by Hidden is they really dial in on making it memorable. You know, how does it stand out? Well, everything is basically cooked in front of you and then handed to you. It really brings that kind of sushi style omakase experience to an izakaya. And that, you know, that adds to the experience. That makes me want to go back and do it again.
Yeah. And that's another restaurant group that really has good service, very dialed in. No matter what their role, everyone there seems to really kind of serve the experience. And that's very encouraging.
All right. Any other thoughts on either Sip and Skewer or Toga?
No, but I'd love to see even more yakitori places open to see their takes on it. But a good start for Houston with these two, I'd say.
Yeah, we should go old school. We should go back to Izakaya Wa and just kind of gauge that experience against these recent meals. Either the River Oaks location that I've never been to, or the one on Memorial near the Beltway that I haven't been to in a few years. Like we're overdue for an Izakaya Wa dinner, I think.
Well, I live near the other one, and I guess Diane Fang, you know, who started Burger Chan, had told me someone that was one of their favorite places to go, and that was kind of like a great endorsement. And so I'd gone several times and had really good experiences there, really solid.
Michael, I'm going to say that does it for the restaurants of the week. Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
That's it for today's show. Thank you so much for listening. Join me on Thursday when my guests will be Brock Wagner from St. Arnold and Asa Hanrahan from The Flying Saucer.